You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 4 October. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Nick Hunt for the week ahead, and then Kyle Durham. He's from Alternative Energy Solutions at FNB Commercial, and talking around energy and rising costs in farming. We, of course, forget. We think farming's all about sunshine and water, but actually, there's a lot of energy there as well. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. The DTIC takes another stab at amending the Companies Act. A fair bit in there, and most of it I actually think probably does fit. Articles worth a read. You'll find that at MoneyWeb. And from Reuters, share trading in embattled China Evergrande halted in Hong Kong earlier this morning as the stock has been defaulting on payments. That story continues to grow. Morning markets, US was green on Friday. S&P up 1.2, NASDAQ up 0.7%. Asia this morning is mixed, with Sydney up 1% and Tokyo down 1%. Commodities mixed as we come into the new week. Gold 1760, Brent 79 and some cents, so moving a bit higher. Rand stronger 1491. Top 40 opening call, looking for 160 point open to the green. That's about 0.25%, little over, and that is 10 cent trades down 0.7 in the Hong Kong lunch break.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nick Kunz, Portfolio Manager, Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate your time this morning. I mentioned the Evergrande suspension in Hong Kong earlier this morning. Is that going to spook markets? Or do we, I mean, have markets kind of absorbed it and understood what's happening there? I mean, Evergrande was always a risk investment, and numbers are big, but should we worry more?
Morning, Simon. The story continues to grow. I'm not really sure what to make of it, quite frankly. It's as you said, it is the world's most indebted property company, $305 billion worth. I think the big problem arises, Simon, is that they've suspended it because they failed on their debt payments. Oh. You know, they've broken a few rules and they're listed on the Hong Kong Exchange, and it's inevitable they had to. The question is, what happens now? What happens to bondholders? What happens to shareholders? Because you can't trade the shares. I mean, I suspect that the Chinese authorities will try to, I guess, have a bit of an asset sale or sell things off. But I think we're seeing quite an historical sort of moment here, because typically the Chinese have not let their companies fail.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe we're seeing sort of a little bit of a honesty coming back in, and company can't keep up with those debts, or let it go down.
Actually, I take your point on that, and I agree. Maybe, you know, China's been hurting us recently, but this is the right thing to do. It was, I mean, there was some, two weeks ago, and I was actually at the beach, folks were saying, this is a Lehman Brothers. My sense is it's not, because, I mean, if you were investing in Evergrande, you knew the risks, whether you were buying the equity or the shares. I mean, whereas, you know, Lehman Brothers, you thought you were buying AAA debt and you were buying junk. I mean, this is what the market is. You buy high risk, and sometimes it fails.
Yeah, and I think also on that point, Simon, people forget that, I mean, this is probably more of a China problem than a global problem. And I mean, China being a sort of a closed state, not many people can actually outside of China invest in Evergrande. I mean, you can't typically, it's not the easiest place to invest. And so I think from a systemic point of view, most of the risks are linked to China, linked to the lenders, and of course, don't forget, ultimately, that is the Chinese government. So I take your point. It's not. It's probably probably not too much a Lehman problem, more of a China-centric problem for now anyway.
So then we glance forward, and the other one is 2 weeks' time, Monday, 18 October, US runs out of money. We've seen this trick before, haven't we? I mean, you know, I don't know, midnight on the 17th, the politicians will do the right thing and issue the debt ceiling increase, I imagine.
You know, politics, more politics. We seem to be dominated at the moment by it. And in this particular one, as you've said, I mean, this play the same record over and over again. They leave it to the last minute. They negotiate between the Democrats and the Republicans. They do a little bit of horse trading, and then we sort of lift the ceiling. I think if you remember, the last time we got to this point was under Mr. Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they did let it lapse. And it was for a couple of days, I think, some poor game rangers in
That's
Yosemite
right.
Park couldn't get paid or something like that. So it is a concern, but I think it's just more politics. You know, that Biden's trying to sort of find some concession to push his infrastructure bill spin, pushing back with they want a corporate tax increase. So again, politics, I don't think it's going to have a massive effect. It'll run right to the wire as always, but I think they will lift it.
Yep, and I've actually forgotten that there was some default. So that was just, as you say, federal staff not being paid. So some poor ranger who's got nothing to do with this.
Exactly.
If we bring it home then, I mean, we've had a volatile couple of weeks. You know, we started this with all the bad news stories, but perhaps none of them so bad. Has this been a buy the dip and now we are sort of back off to the races? What's your sense of how this market is running?
I think we'll know in the next couple of weeks. I mean, obviously, third quarter earnings season coming back in, giving us a little bit of direction as well out the US. We have this reopening trade, and I guess for me also coming up on Friday, Jobs Friday, non-farm numbers. I mean, how much, if we get another good jobless print, I mean, this is the last jobless number before the Fed meeting in November. I mean, does this mean that we actually get that taper starting this year? And I think that's what markets are going to look towards now. Keep an eye on that 10-year yield. You know, if it starts to sort of continue to grind higher, we're going to continue to see that sort of flow from moving out of growth into value. And I think ultimately, if we do things go smoothly, it might not necessarily be by the dip, but I think we will continue to grind higher for now anyway. And then, of course, the vaccine in the background. We get the rest of the world vaccinated and we'll see how we get on. But against the backdrop, I must say, Simon, against the backdrop of markets that are not cheap. So just bear that in mind, that they are still quite expensive at the moment.
Yeah, I take your point on that. Markets have run incredibly well. And you know, there have been some sort of some headwinds. I mean, I look at oil at 79, which certainly can't be fun. We've got Goldman Sachs saying potentially 90 in that. It's small things like that, which in a market, which, as you say, is not cheap, can become proper headwinds.
Yeah, and bring it a little closer to home, bring it closer to emerging markets. You know, oil at $70, $75, $80 a barrel with the rand at 13 is not necessarily a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But with the rand all of a sudden looking like we're having a little bit of risk off, that EM trade heading back towards possibly 15 with oil at 80, that's not a really good story. So you've got to keep an eye on those inflation numbers because that's going to hit home quite quickly in South Africa.
Yeah, it is going to hurt. And we'll get that good fuel price increase on Wednesday. It is going to be nasty. Portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth, Nick Kuntz. Appreciate the early morning. A poll today, chatting there with Nick on the weekend. Well, what's worrying you about markets? Is it Evergrande? Is it the US debt ceiling? Is it oil? Perhaps it's just everything, or maybe it's actually just nothing. You can let us know on our LinkedIn and MoneyWeb profiles, in both cases at MoneyWeb.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Kyle Durham, Head Alternative Energy Solutions at FNB Commercial. Kyle, appreciate the early morning. Talking energy and farming, and I set it up in my front of my intro. Intuitively, us non-farmers, and that's me and probably most of my listeners, we kind of think farming is you know, water and sunshine. But actually, farms, and depending on the farms, I suppose, they can be moderately energy intensive. And the Eskom price increases, which have hurt everyone, and inability to supply, can really impact and you know, harm a successful farmer.
Definitely, Simon, and yeah, thanks for giving us a call and having a bit of a chat about energy. So look, farmers are, you know, I think no stranger to energy issues. They are sometimes forgotten about, and I think a lot of the solutions that are out there for, you know, me and you and the general business, you know, manufacturer or property owner or whatever the case might be, are quite a good fit also for the farming community. So So really three broad issues that the farming industry or farming sector in South Africa are facing is energy cost. I mean, the runaway out-of-control energy cost above inflationary cost increases have really come home to roost and are eating into the margins of these businesses. The second one is really energy certainty. So really not just load shedding, but just being outlying rural areas, power interruptions are now coming, are coming to the fore as a key business issue for continuity's sake. And then the third one is really this global rise of global climate change and the focus of the world on that and the need to consider, shifting your operations to a greener one and more sustainable at that. So those are really the three broad issues that farmers are facing, and alternative energy solutions fit that profile really well as a way to address many of those problems.
And I mean, is the alternative as simple as, and again, I'm not any farming expert here. Is it as simple as some wind and solar? I mean, how big is an individual farm's requirement? We've had the gazetting of 100 megawatt self-generation, and we're certainly seeing, a lot of the property companies, the mining companies, they were going down that route, but their needs are quite massive. A farmer's need is bigger than my household, but is it as big as some of those commercial operations?
So farmers' operations go from really almost residential size. So, mm-hmm. so really taking a household, kind of off grid is the one scale. And then we've got some of our mega farmers in the likes of the citrus regions that have operate large pack houses. We've got the large dairies that have significant energy requirements. So they're not at the scale of a mine, for example, that they'd be looking at 30 or 40 megawatts. But some of our larger farmers are implementing 2-3 megawatt projects with internal transmission infrastructure, etc. And these projects can easily get to 30 to 50 million rand without blinking an eye.
And are we seeing this happen? I mean, is there a trend where farmers are starting to embrace alternative energy solutions? I would imagine that they would, to a fair degree, be fairly at the cutting edge of this.
So definitely. So we've seen a big uptake in the last 18 months of really farmers starting to explore alternative energy solutions, from simple, grid-tied solar plants. So they're not looking there to address your kind of power interruption. That would not include batteries. Those would just simply be to start making some headway into the energy cost. And then we've started seeing recently, a move towards storage. So including batteries and other storage mechanisms, be it pump storage or otherwise in their operations. And then they've gone through the Eskom process of banking, which means they can address a lot of the seasonality. So a lot of the regulatory, hurdles have also opened up, and technology hurdles have opened up. So this has led to really farmers looking at alternative energy solutions as core to kind of the business expansion.
And is there funding available? Because I imagine, certainly, there might be a large upfront cost, but invariably that security of power and in many times cheaper than Eskom, and then, of course, avoiding the well ahead of inflation increases from Eskom. Is there funding available to essentially bridge it for that farmer who doesn't perhaps have the initial outlay?
Definitely. So that's where we really are quite passionate, and as FNB Alternative Energy Solutions, is really being able to take a look at that project on its metrics. So really take a look at from an end-to-end point of view. So to say, listen, your 30 or 50 million rand investment, or your 10 million rand investment, or whatever the case might be, we can understand the upside from an energy cost perspective, from an energy certainty perspective, and start factoring that into our own credit assessment, and actually give you that benefit up front before the first solar panel's been put on the ground mounts on your property.
And do we have the skills and the capacity? I remember a long time ago, I mean, maybe as much as a decade ago, looking at taking my house off grid. The numbers didn't add up. They probably do now, but now I'm in an apartment. But the numbers didn't work. But also, I mean, it was a struggle for me, and perhaps it was just me, of actually finding providers and the like. Do we have the capacity? Do we have the skills locally in South Africa? Because the demand is growing from, it's not just farming, it's mining, it's private housing. Households?
Yes, so we've got, at our last estimate, we've got about 800 to 1,200 alternative energy, providers, be it involved in solar or battery inverters and the like. There's the definite growth in, particularly in the smaller scale of really accreditation of the likes of, you know, SAPVIA, the PV Green Card, the P4 platform from the Association of Renewable Energy Practitioners. So those go some way to giving us a little bit of quality assurance. As a bank, we actually have our own accreditation parameters that we apply to suppliers, and we can communicate that clearly with our customers and say, listen, you know, the supplier that you've chosen has gone through our accreditation. We'd be comfortable, you know, to provide finance, you know, and they've met your tender requirements, so we can then go ahead. You know, so it's a little bit of a play on both. I mean, we look at your quality assurance, you know, externally, but also internally, you know, within the bank's processes to give a customer a little bit of comfort in this investment that they're making. But certainly in South Africa, we've got very, very qualified suppliers that have got, you know, significant experience in excess of 100 megawatt in rooftop and ground mount. There's numerous now, so I'd be quite comfortable to use a South African supplier if that's.
And at this point in the equation, I mean, it is almost a no-brainer for the farmer, you know, chatting with you and thinking through it and, you know, being a little bit smarter around what these requirements are. I mean, it's going to increase productivity almost certainly. It's going to reduce costs. It helps him become more self-sufficient. I almost suspect that pretty much most farmers out there are queuing up to go with alternative energy.
So, you know, it's funny. Sometimes, you know, alternative energy is almost too good to be true, particularly if you look at the potential yields and that, et cetera. So often that South African, you know, kind of mindset of what's the catch comes in.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly what we've noticed is that, you know, certain areas will go for, you know, certain farmers in an area will actually go for alternative energy. And then suddenly, you know, four or five farms in that, you know, that region would also join the queue. We normally just wait for one person to be bitten before we go and take our chances.
Yeah, I see that. I mean, if my neighbour puts solar on their roof, I suddenly I'm in that queue. It's kind of like if someone's doing it, then you realise that the math does add up, and that's a key component. I mentioned, you know, 10 years ago when I was looking, is that pricing really has markedly moved in that last decade.
Definitely. I mean, so solar, you know, the modules themselves are really now governed by supply and demand globally. I mean, so it's a dollar commoditized asset now. Batteries, we're still a little bit in that cycle of, you know, the 4K TV, you know, it was 40 grand 3 years ago, and now you can get one for 10. But really, we're starting to see some significant inroads in the storage pricing. So we're probably a year away before supply and demand really, year or two away before supply and demand really drives lithium-ion battery storage pricing. And then we'll start seeing the price where it financially makes sense to implement storage making even more sense.
We'll leave that there. We're talking energy and farming with Kyle Durham. He's head alternative energy solutions, F&B commercial. Kyle, appreciate the early morning. Thank you.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
That's it for today. The poll we were asking you on Friday, we've been chatting with Chantal Marks around the Capitec results. Her comment was they were really, really great, but costs increases were a concern. We asked you what you thought of them. Just over 40% of you said Capitec the best US, best there is. A quarter was saying average. About a third of you were saying absolutely risks abound and you are not convinced. Remember, you can always have a vote, have your say on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app 7:30 a.m. podcast available just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nicole, Nabuchle, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.